See so many familiar faces over the years in our room this morning. This is one of our favorite times of the year when kids come back and they see us, and it's funny seeing some of these kids. I remember being this big, and now they've got kids that size of their own. And so if you're visiting family here for the holidays, we're so grateful that you chose to worship with us this morning. And if you're from our community, or if you're listening online, we're so thankful that you're part of our service this morning. And hope that in some way we've encouraged you and you've benefited from the things that we have done and that we're going to do the rest of the morning. So thank you for being part. It was about a month ago I was doing some public benefit work, I guess you'd say. I don't know what you'd call it. I was out doing what you guys call me to do, and there was a young lady I was working with. And we would have these moments, these moments where we were doing some specific jobs, but then there were moments when we weren't doing those jobs and we could just talk. And we've been friends for a few years, but she said in the midst of one of those moments when we could just talk, she said, I can't wait for the holidays to be over. And that caught me off guard. Because when I think of days like today and days like tomorrow morning, I think of family. And I'm going to see my kid tonight at Christmas Eve, and I'm going to wake up in the morning, and that boy who's much, much bigger and much taller than I am now is going to be back at home in his bedroom, eating at his spot at the table, laughing and sharing and experiencing the joys of life and holidays. And so when someone says, I can't wait for this to be over, I don't always get that perspective. So I kept listening. And I didn't have to ask many questions. I just listened to her tell her story. And her story was one that was tough. Her story was one of losing the most important person in her life not too long before that. And her story was, here's all that I want it to be, but here's what I know it will be. And so there was an edge to it. And my guess is there are some in the room who are like me, who are ecstatic at kids and grandkids and everybody that will be running around your house the next 48 hours. But there are probably some in here where you're ready for January 2nd to get here. And this sermon is for both of us. Because I want it to be this reminder that there is so much to the story. And the story is more than just nativity scene and the manger and shepherds and angels. But it's the story of hope. That it's the story of, in the midst of a world that is often gray and blue, there is an answer. And the answer is found not just in the one in the manger, but the answer is found in the one that stood outside of a tomb and conquered death. And that perspective changes everything. And it doesn't make heartache go away, and it doesn't make hurts instantly heal, but at least it gives us the reminder that there is so much more. Okay, you all know people who right now are fighting cancer or heart disease or are on hospice care. Right now, you know people who are longing to be married, and for whatever reason, they're not. And maybe it's because they haven't found the right person, or maybe it's because their spouse decided the other pasture was greener and they left, or maybe they died. And you look at this set of days different. And I know we all know people in us and around us who are just dreaming of a white Christmas. I was at the grocery store yesterday, not the grocery store, one of the stores here in town, and I do my best not to go to stores this time of year, but I was at one of the stores by myself, and I was waiting in line, and I promised this lady had bought every single piece of candy the store had to offer, because she had a whole Walgreens buggy full of candy, and I thought, either she's got a lot of grandkids, or she really likes sugar, but I'm standing there behind her as they're checking her out, and the little boy keeps tugging on grandma's jacket saying, is it going to snow? Is it going to snow? Is it going to snow? Because every kid wants a white Christmas. So I wondered, why is a white Christmas so popular? So I decided, well, first of all, that's a rather famous Christmas song. So I Googled the Christmas song, and on every single list I could find on the internet, the song sung by Bing Crosby is the most popular Christmas song ever. Okay, most of you, if you know who Bing Crosby is, you got to be probably 30 and above to even know who Bing Crosby is. You're singing the song in your head, right? Nice little low baritone, happy smiling face. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. But yet that song isn't about joy. And that song isn't about happy. Okay, that song is written by, oddly enough, a Jewish man by the name of Irving Berlin. You figure that part out on your own. And he writes that song because he wants more than anything for it to be different. Because where he is in his life is not a white Christmas. Where he is it's more like a brown Christmas. And the truth is, he's going through the most difficult phase up to that point in his life that he's ever been through. And that's why he says, here's what I'm dreaming of. Because the reality is, that's not where I'm at right this second. And some of us might be in that spot. We are in the midst of wanting a white Christmas. And we want a white Christmas because it covers up the brown, and sometimes it covers up the mud. Because the truth is eventually the tree goes in the fireplace, the lights go up in the attic, and all the decorations lose their luster. The snow melts, and the mud comes back. And if that's where you are, I have an answer for you. And if that's where you're not, I have an answer for you too. Because the answer is, I yearn for more than just Jesus in a manger. I yearn for the reign of God. I yearn for that moment in this world where everything is put right again. I yearn for that moment when there isn't heartache and there isn't tears and there isn't saying, I sure wish it'd be a white Christmas to cover up the mud. I yearn for those days when all is like it's supposed to be. And I yearn for victory. So I'm having this discussion with this young lady. And I go back to the office after we're finished doing our work. And I put my feet up on the desk and I open my Bible to the reading of the day. And the reading of the day happens to be Matthew 8 and 9. And so I just want to make the reading of today Matthew 8 and 9. It's not the story of the nativity scene. It's not the story of shepherds and wise men. It's not the story of virgins and inns. But it's the story of more than just Jesus in a manger. Here's how that story starts. Jesus walks into town, and the first thing he sees in Matthew chapter 8 is he sees a leper. And the leper was the one who had been ostracized by society, and they had to basically remove themselves from not only society, but from their own family. And the leper, at least from a small distance, will shout to Jesus, Lord, are you willing? And it's one of these great statements of faith that is going to keep appearing throughout these two chapters. And the leper says, Jesus, are you willing? And he will shout out, be clean. And we have the first story of triumph. It doesn't seem that it goes on much longer, and Jesus runs into a centurion's servant. Now, this would be a middle-ranking Roman official that would be over a rather large group of soldiers. But the centurion's servant, who is not a Jew, comes up to Jesus and he says, my servant is paralyzed and he's terribly suffering. Could you do something? And Jesus says, I will. And so they start making their way to the centurion's house. And the centurion, my guess is, outside of his front door, stops Jesus and he says, I don't deserve you under my roof, but you just say the word and I believe what you say will happen. And Jesus will give this line. He will say, I haven't found faith like this anywhere in Israel. If anybody should know the power of Messiah, if anybody should get what Messiah could do and what Messiah would bring, it would be Israel. And yet they don't seem to fathom it, at least at this point yet. But this Roman centurion over the bad guys does. And that servant at that point is healed. Jesus then goes from there, and he's with Peter, it seems, and they go into Peter's house, and Peter's mother-in-law is sick, and Jesus touches her hand, and she gets up, and she starts serving them. I so much want to say that's what every mother-in-law ought to do for their son-in-laws, but I won't. Jesus heals Peter's mother-in-law, and they gather around the table. Then Jesus goes from there, and in the midst of that story, it's time for them to go across the lake, and so they are in the middle of this Lake of Galilee, or the Sea of Galilee, as we call it, and the storm comes. Now, what's interesting is the storm coming on the Sea of Galilee is a normal occurrence. There's a group of mountains right there, and we've all kind of been to Ruidosa, and you kind of get to a certain spot, and the wind always blows, right? And so they get to the Sea of Galilee, and they're in the middle, and the wind kicks off the mountains, and before you know it, this sea is raging. And even though four of these guys, at least four, are these avid fishermen, they're scared spitless. And they look at Jesus and they say, "Lord, save us." And they've watched him heal and they've watched him do some pretty amazing things up to this point. And you almost wonder when you're the one looking at the story, how come they don't understand that what's going on? And their question is, can you do this? And Jesus will say, "Oh, you of little faith, why are you afraid?" That yes, the waves are crashing, and yes, the wind is blowing, and yes, the sea is coming over the edge of the boat, but you have no reason to be afraid. And the disciples will say, after he calms the sea with a word, they will say, "What kind of man is this? That even at the sound of his voice stills the storm." They get back to shore. And upon getting off of the boat, they run into two stark raving madmen. And these two stark raving madmen are full of demons. And they say, "What do you want with us, Son of God?" Even the demons know who Jesus is. Not everybody else has figured it out, but they do. It's kind of odd. The centurion gets it, and the demons get it so far. But the demons say, "What do you want with us?" And so Jesus is going to cast them out. And the demons will say, "Send us into the pigs." And so Jesus, in one word, will just say, "Go." And the two crazy, possessed, stark, raving, mad men, the demons go from them to the pigs. And the pigs go from the farm to the cliff and to the bottom. And those two men are left in their right mind. And then Jesus goes from there and he runs into a paralytic. And to the paralytic, he says, "Not get up and walk," but he says, "Your sins are forgiven." And in the midst of that story, as he is looking at the paralytic and telling him about his sins being gone, the Jews instantly start to get mad and they say, "Who do you think you are? You're a blasphemer. You can't forgive sins." And Jesus says, "If I can't do that, then I probably can't do this." And he says, "Get your mat and go." And that man stands up and he rolls up his mat and he leaves. The power of a Savior. Then another ruler comes onto that scene. It appears almost immediately after he's done with the paralytic. And he says, "My daughter's dead. I think you can fix it. Put your hand on her and she will live." And so they start making the walk to Jairus' house. We know his name from another story. But on their walk there, a woman comes in, and kind of like the leper, she has been an outcast from society because of her physical condition, and her brain says, "I've heard of this Jesus, and if I just touch his cloak, then maybe I'll get healed." And so she runs in, and among all that crowd and that throng of people that's on their way to Jairus' house, she touches the hem of his garment, and Jesus stops. And he says, "Who touched me?" And my guess is she looks around, and my guess is she's probably kind of sheepish, and there comes a point where she's got to give an answer, and she says, "I did." And Jesus will say, "Daughter, your faith has healed you." And from that moment on, that which separated this woman from her family and that which separated this woman from society that she lived in, that is removed, and she is back to being who she was supposed to be. But in the meantime, you've got Jairus, and he's still tugging on Jesus' coat, and he's still saying, "My daughter's dead, and only you can fix this." And so Jesus goes in, and he says, "The girl is only asleep," and he takes her hand, and he helps her up, and the daughter is alive. And then he heals two blind men, and in the midst of the healing of the two blind men, Jesus says, "Do you believe?" And their answer together in harmony is, "Yes, Lord." And then finally, at the end of chapter 9, he heals a man who is mute. And he's mute because of a demon. and the demon is cast out, and the crowd says this, "Nothing like this has ever been seen." My friends, nothing like this has ever been seen. If you're in the midst of Christmas and it's joyous and you're excited and you can't wait to get to the dinner table tonight for Christmas Eve meal and you can't wait to open presents in the morning with your kids and your grandkids, there's nothing like this scene ever before. And if you're in the midst of a brown Christmas and more than anything you just want it to pass and you want it to get over so you can quit feeling heartbroken and you can quit feeling like the world is just going in a bad place and you're just longing for something, my answer is the same. Nothing like this has been seen in Israel. And so when we tell the story of Jesus, we tell the story of Jesus from beginning to end, and the story is about the reign of God. And only the reign of God. I was sitting in a coffee shop the other day with a friend who is a Jew. And they are wrestling, he and his family, with all that is going on in the Middle East. It's in the middle of Hanukkah, if none of us are Jewish in this room, I don't think. But it's the middle of Hanukkah season, as well as it is the middle of the Christmas season. And so in the midst of that, he says, you know, in some ways I'm envious of you Christians. And so whenever somebody says that, I'm going to say, well, let's try to capitalize on this. Well, why are you envious of us? Because you think reign of God is here and we're longing for it. I go to bed every night praying that Messiah will come and he'll fix the Middle East. I go to bed every night knowing that Messiah has come. And maybe the Middle East isn't fixed, and maybe all of the world's problems aren't solved, and maybe life isn't as perfectly lined up as I want it to be all the time. But the answer is, at the end of this story, I know who's going to win. And that's where the reign of God fits in. That we are constantly reminded to tune out some of the other stuff. I mean, tune out, we sang a bunch of Christmas songs. Tune out the Christmas songs for a second. Tune out the Hallmark movies. Tune out the television commercials about the latest cell phone to buy your children and about places you can go on vacation in the midst of Christmas, and tune out all of the stuff going on and just listen. Because here's what I hear. I hear victory. And I hear victory in those moments when my life is dreaming of a white Christmas. And I hear victory in the midst of those moments when I'm wrestling with just trying to be joyous in the middle of a hard day. And I hear victory in the midst of holding the hands of family members who are losing the one they love more than anything at that very moment. And I hear victory when I see the family in front of me that is broken because of sin. And I hear victory when I hear of the child that is hopefully coming home. And I hear a victory in every single story we tell. Because the story is about Jesus. John says this in 1 John 3, verse 8. He says, "The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work." Okay, you heard Mark quote that great line from John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes," and we can all quote that great verse, and our kids learn that like by the time they're four, I think. And that's a great verse, but here's what Christ came to do. He came to save us and to crush the other one. And that's victory. When my days are full of joy and laughter and family around a table, I need to know that there's even more than that. And when my days are full of heartbreak and sorrow, and there's nothing else I can do but pray that I get through the next few days, I need to know that he came to save and to fix. And one day it's going to be right. My favorite line from the book of Revelation. It's where Jesus says in the midst of that, "Behold, I make all things new. I make all things new." I can't even fathom what new looks like. I can fathom what close to new looks like, and I can fathom what looks pretty good when everything has kind of fallen in line and life is great, but I can also fathom from every other angle, sometimes through my eyes, sometimes through your eyes, sometimes through the eyes of the world or friends, but I don't know if I can fully fathom everything new. But someday, and I hope it's someday soon, but someday everything is going to be made new. I've had to drive back and forth to Lubbock too much lately, for multiple reasons, but I'm driving back by myself late one night, and okay, you don't know this, but I didn't tell Wayne which songs to sing, except for the one we're going to sing here in a few minutes. But I love Christmas music. I mean, if you listen to my iPad in the car, every 10th song is Christmas music, and I don't turn off the Christmas music in July. I like hearing Christmas. I love hearing Santa Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I like hearing that in August. I just love that music, and I love the power of the words. But I'm driving home, and it's dark, and I'm kind of struggling in a way because I don't do great driving at night in the pitch dark. And Martina McBride, who's a country singer, starts singing a song called "O Holy Night." I had to stop and pull over the car. I thought it better to try to drive this road without tear-filled eyes because her voice was magnificent, and not only was her voice magnificent, but it was the most powerful Christmas song I've ever heard. And what I loved about her rendition of it is she didn't just sing the verse we all know. And so I've asked Wayne, and he's not going to do it Martina McBride style. It's going to be a little lower. But I've asked Wayne to come and to lead that as our invitation song. And not just to lead the verse or two that we know, but to see the whole story of that songwriter's vision of what happened on, in his mind, that holy night, and what that means for all the rest of us. I'm going to be here at the front during the singing of that song, and then I'm going to go to the back, and if you need someone to pray over you, you can find me here, or you can find me back there. If you just need someone to say, it's going to be all right, let me tell you, it's going to be all right. Maybe not today and maybe not tomorrow, but one day it's all going to be new and it's going to be all right. But let's sing this song that we know all so well together. Wayne, let's stand.